Up next, Ale Marzulli joins me. Nephilim hybrids, that's what he's been working on. And wait till you hear what's next. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Ale Marzulli, author, lecturer, filmmaker, has penned at least 8 books, including the Nephilim trilogy. This could be number 9, Nephilim hybrids. And, of course, he was just on with me just several weeks ago with Richard Shaw as we were talking about their Watcher series. Ale, welcome back.
Great to be here again, George. Thanks for having me on.
I knew you'd be coming back, but not this soon. But this book, it's out. It's ready to go.
It's ready to go, and we're really excited about it.
First of all, you've got to explain who the Nephilim are.
Well, you know, the backstory is, and I think we'll touch on it through the interview tonight, but there's an ancient prophetic text which sets up something which I believe has been carrying on for literally thousands of years, and it's this. And it's actually from the book of Genesis, first book found in the Torah. And it says, and here's the backstory there. You've got the God of the Bible, Adam and Eve, and you got the serpent. And the God of the Bible basically states something which is profound. And he says this: your seed, talking to the serpent, will be at war, at enmity with the seed of the woman. He will crush your head. You will bruise his heel. There's a prophetic narrative there, because the he that's talking about is, becomes Messiah. The seed of the woman eventually becomes Messiah. But the seed of the serpent, and this is what's so crucial about this passage, in my opinion, the seed of a serpent, 3 chapters later in Genesis 6, erupts. And what we read is something that's profound, profoundly disturbing. We hear that the sons of God, and in the Hebrew that's B'nai HaElohim, and, you know, many people like Stephen Quayle have come on the show and talked about that. You know, most of your Coast followers know this, but for the new newcomers, it's always good to go back. The sons of God are the fallen angels, and they see the women, and they desire them, and they take wives from whomever they want to. It's just whoever they want to, they take these women, they impregnate them, and the offspring is a hybrid being, part angelic, part human, which probably means, and I'm reading into the scripture here, that they have superhuman powers on some level.
Well, that tells me, number one, that they, the Nephilim, are physical beings. Mm-hmm. They aren't spiritual by any means, are they?
No, but they may have supernatural powers that mere mortals do not have. What's interesting is, apparently, one of the side effects was giantism. And they were men of renown. And what's interesting also is it says the Nephilim were on the earth in those days and also afterwards. And, of course, last time we were on with Richard Shaw, we were talking about, you know, our Watchers 10 movie, and it's also in the book, but the whole Afghan giant thing, which Steve Quayle broke right there, right here on Coast to Coast. And that was astounding, because we talked to the shooter and then a third witness. So you've got Steve Quayle's pilot, who comes on the record, and you interviewed him on Coast. It's a riveting interview. People can go back in the archives and listen to that. Then you've got our shooter, which is one of the guys that shot this thing. And he says the thing was about 12 feet, absolutely humongous, 6 fingers, 6 toes, flaming red hair. He moved with an agility and speed that just defied him. I mean, he just looked at it and went, how can this guy move that quickly? But he did. And he impaled one of the soldiers, and they brought him down by shooting him. And there's probably 12 to 15 guys in this platoon. They shot him in the face. They basically blew his head off, is what they did. And down he went.
Where did the Nephilim come from? I mean, these aren't cases of angels coming from heaven. To me, it sounds like they're coming from a planetary system out there.
Well, and that's up for grabs, isn't it? Look, anything that's not from this planet is extraterrestrial. So if I say an angelic being, call it what you will, is an extraterrestrial, now people can say, oh my gosh. But in essence, that's exactly what it is. Anything off-world is an extraterrestrial, even if something that is off-world is interdimensional. And I believe what's happening is that these entities, wherever they're from, are interdimensional. You know, there's a whole, and I'm sure you know about this, there's a whole talk being bandied around on the internet that we live in a holographic universe.
Right.
I mean, if that's the case, then it's like, where are we really, and what is this really? And does that mean that we're it, that there's nothing else out there? And I don't know. But I mean, if we're in a holographic universe, then all bets are off. But it does explain some interesting facts. and explains the fact that when these so-called angelic beings come, they have the ability, the uncanny ability, to manipulate space, time, and matter and energy in ways that human beings cannot do it. And so it appears like it's magic to us, but they just do it because it's who they are. It's what they can do. It's what they come in with. But they manipulate space, time, matter, and energy. And we read about this. We hear about this. So I lean to the extra, you know, to the interdimensional hypotheses rather than the extraterrestrial one.
Other than that,
we're right down. We're going lockstep together. We know that we're being visited. We know something is going on. There's a breeding program going on within the UFO community. Hybrids are being created. The Nephilim were real. They were on the Earth. The ancient structures that are all over the planet, from Gaza to Peru to, you know, Machu Picchu. I mean, wherever you want to go. I mean, this is, in my opinion, it's you can't duplicate these things today. You can't. Even with the modern technology that we have, you can't build a wall like what we see in Sacsayhuaman.
Isn't it amazing how when you read Genesis and just try to equate it to a real life event, it echoes it almost perfectly?
I agree. I mean, I'm right there with you. Something is going on, and all of this is really hidden from most people. Most, even in the churches, most people never get into this stuff. You know, they read about supernatural events in the Bible and the Torah, but when they're faced with something, like we showed that fairy, which, by the way, went viral, George. It's like got over 500,000 hits on YouTube. It's not so. And this, of course, is the work of Jaime Masson. And Jaime allowed us to go with this. And someone, this 13-year-old kid, found it on the side of a road and brought it to Jaime. And we were down there 3 years ago filming Watcher 7. And Jaime, you know, let us film, and we interviewed him, and we interviewed the geneticist Ricardo Rangel, and they did DNA testing on this thing. And I mean, we were taken aback by what we were seeing. And I mean, I'll just spill the beans here because people need to know about it. And we talked about it in the last show, but we did the x-rays of this thing. Jaime sent us the x-rays. We were there when they took the creature out, got it x-rays, and we had no idea what we were looking at because there were all these little white, dots placed asymmetrically in the body that showed up on the x-ray. We didn't know what it was. Well, I went to a veterinarian out here in an undisclosed location near where I live, and I sat with the vet, and he looked at the x-rays, and my first question to him, look, is this some kind of a hoax that somebody put this thing together from different animals? And he looked at it and said, you know, part of me wants to go there, but if it is, it's done so masterfully. I can see everything. Everything fits together perfectly. There's spaces where everything attaches to the pelvic girdle and the bones of the legs and the arms are hollow, which would make sense if something had to fly like that, where the wings attach. There's more mass, there's more bone, more muscle. So I said, well, what about these white dots? And he goes, oh, I've seen those before. And I go, what do you mean? He goes, they're BBs. And I went, what do you mean by BBs? And he goes, you know, like buckshot, like birdshot. And then the light bulb went off. And I went, oh, my gosh, this thing was shot out of the sky. And that explains the broken bone that we see in the x-ray in the leg. I mean, you can see it. It's fractured.
Oh, it's bizarre. Now, the picture on the cover of the Nephilim hybrids, mm-hmm. That's the creature in
that's
the jar,
the creature,
right?
That's the creature in the jar. There's a whole chapter. You know, look, Richard does an incredible job. So the book details some of that, and it's sort of behind the scenes for my POV. And then, of course, there's different chapters in the book which we don't cover at all in Watchers 10, but they're really meant to go together. But, I mean, we sat on this story for 3 years. We're still investigating it. It's amazing how people who have never seen it, never looked at the x-rays, but they think they know everything about it, and they don't know anything about it. I mean, look, we're not here trying to, you know, promote a hoax to people. We're not trying to do that. What we are trying to do is, what is this thing? And really,
and get to the bottom of it. Sure.
Exactly. And I was leaning towards hoax the whole time until I sat down with the vet. And once he said birdshot, then I went, okay, so this is birdshot. These aren't little drops of hot glue, which is holding this thing together.
And that matches the story of someone using a shotgun.
Exactly. Exactly.
Wow. We're going to get into the book at the last half of this this hour, L.A., and we'll take some calls with you next hour. But is it possible this creature, which has a face of a human, basically, doesn't it?
Sure it does.
Could it be some kind of an insect? I mean, if you look at a praying mantis,
mm-hmm.
it looks like a little man. And then, you know, so take a different creature that has more of a human look to it with wings. Could there be some kind of insect or species out there that we really haven't uncovered yet?
Look, anything is possible, and that's why more testing needs to be done on this thing. Since this thing went viral on YouTube, what was really interesting is I've had probably about 3 or 4 emails from different people who have had encounters with something very similar to what we show in the film and also in the book. One man went into his bathroom, flicked on the lights, and this thing was clutched to the screen on the outside, clinging to the screen. And, of course, he completely freaked out. Someone else saw something drive by their car fairly recently that looked very, very similar to what we show in the video. And the guy, you know, I questioned him. And the guy went, look, whatever this thing was, as I'm driving, it didn't fly horizontally like a bat or a bird would. It flew upright. Upright. In other words, the thing was standing and flying. And he was just, you know, am I really seeing what I think I'm seeing type of thing? So we've had some people that have emailed me telling their story, telling what they've seen. And that's what's so incredible about being on Coast and putting things on YouTube and getting the word out. All of a sudden, people start coming out of the woodwork, and they're not afraid of ridicule. They're not afraid to tell their story. And so we're getting some feedback on this, which is good. I think this thing is a hybrid. Now, I call it a Nephilim hybrid. The name of the book is Nephilim Hybrids, okay? So I'm not calling this thing a Nephilim hybrid. I don't know what it is. If I'm intellectually honest, I don't know what it is at this point. There's been no DNA testing that we've seen results of. We have seen the x-rays. It does seem to be real. The face looks human, pointed ears, teeth like a lion. The wings are there. It's got claws for hands. I mean, Jaime sent me a photo when he first got this thing, and on the hands, I mean, he's got real claws. It's got a stinger on the tail, which is very unnerving.
Yeah, it looks like it would attack you if it came flying by you.
It's not a happy looking creature. I mean,
no, it's. And how tall is it?
It's about 9 inches, to 10 inches.
Can you imagine a swarm of them coming at you?
No, I can't. I not at all. And you know what's really strange? George, you know, Southern California, hummingbird people, we've all been around a hummingbird. But the first time I heard a hummingbird, I didn't know what it was. I was startled by it. And I'm looking around like, what is this thing? And like 6-7 feet away, there's a hummingbird. And I was just taken aback on how loud this thing was. Well, this thing's a lot bigger than a hummingbird. And the wings are larger. And we had someone that came on the record, She Remains Anonymous, in our very first Watchers film. And she talks about seeing these things in an undisclosed location, and she was just taken aback by how loud the noise of the wings were. And interestingly enough, the prophecies which talk about these things being released or something that might look like the fairy that we're talking about now, it said the wings sounded like many horses.
L.A., when we come back, let's get into Nephilim hybrids. We're going to go through some specifics when we roll right back. Gosh, I was looking at the calendar with Tom, and our Asheville, North Carolina event is right around the corner. It's really coming up fast. So those of you who haven't jumped on board yet, do so. You can pick your tickets right online. Go to coasttocoastam.com. Look for the picture of the Asheville, North Carolina event, and there we are. Click it. Go into the theater's website. Look for August 27th on the date. And that'll take you right there. And then pick your seats. There's 28 seats left on the bottom. That is it. And then the rest, everybody's up in the balcony. But there's good seats wherever you go. I was kidding last week when I said you needed a telescope up in the balcony. You really don't. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. L.A. Marzulli with us. We're talking about his work, Nephilim Hybrids. Talk about the Lovelock Cave handprint. What is that, L.A.?
Really fascinating story. The backstory on this is a friend of mine, Ron Moorhead. I know he's been on your show.
Yeah.
Talking, you know, he's a Sasquatch Bigfoot researcher. And he was called to a cave by another researcher. Now, the Lovelock Cave is in Lovelock, Nevada. And it was originally a site of the Paiute Indian tribe. First Nation people, Native Americans. I actually spoke with a Paiute Native American elder about the cave, one-on-one, which is incredible. I said, you know, can you tell me about the cave? And she's telling me this oral tradition, which has been handed down through the centuries. She talked about these large, very tall, very strong, red-headed giants that lived in the area that would take the women, take the children, and eat them, so they were cannibals. And what is now in front of the cave, it's a dry lake bed, but you go back 1,000 years, and there was water there. And it was very lush and very verdant. The cave has been sealed off by the BLM, and originally the cave went way back into the hillside. We'll never know how far back it really went because it's all sealed off. So when you go there, there's really not much to see. There's just a cave. The legend that was told to me by this Paiute elderess was this, that the tribe finally got tired of having been raided by these giants and these cannibals taking their children and eating them.
Jeez.
They had a war party, and they warred against the giants. And they basically gave them an ultimatum. Stop doing this, get right, or we're going to wipe you out. And, of course, the giants wouldn't do that. They retreated to what is now known as the Lovelock Cave, and they went deep into the cave. Interesting. It's always a cave, just like the Afghan giants.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, really interesting with that. And so the Paiutes took all this brush and put it in the mouth of the cave and piled it and piled it and piled it. And then they set it on fire. And as some of the giants would run out, they were shot. Interestingly enough, in the dry lake bed around the 20s and the 30s, 1920, 1930, I have the paper someplace to clip. I believe a 12-footer skeleton was found of a male and a 10-foot female. Very, very tall. And, of course, all that's hushed up. We have no idea where the remains might have been. Again, the BLM has gone in there, and they sealed the cave off. An archaeologist, before they did that, archaeologists did go in, and I've got a book actually from the 20s, which is really interesting because it's, again, it's you got to kind of read between the lines, but there's hints of cannibalism, which ties back into the Paiute legend of the giants. Now, in that book, it doesn't talk about very large skeletons. But in one of the accounts, it talks about finding some 7-footers, which, again, isn't that large. It's not like the 9-footers I found out on Catalina, but it's pretty big. So fast forward to modernity, and Ron Moorhead, Joe Taylor, and I forget the other gentleman's name. Please forgive me. He's the guy, I think, that actually made the discovery. And when you go to the Lovelock Cave, there are no electric lights. There's no tour guide. It's just a cave, and it's essentially the mouth of a cave, because they sealed off both tunnels that would go deep into the mountain. Those are completely sealed off. So there's really nothing to see. There's a wooden platform there, and you look up above, and the ceiling is all blackened perhaps from a fire, which ties back into the oral tradition. And these guys were exploring around the walls of the cave. And one of the guys, and the picture's up on the Coast website, found this giant, what appeared to be a giant handprint on the wall. Well, these guys took pictures of this thing. They sent it to me, and I made a beeline out there, but I arrived about 30 days after the fact. So we get to the site. We're all excited. We hike up this trail. There's no one around. And you can, by the way, when you're in the mouth of the cave, you can see for miles, literally. It's an amazing vantage point. Strategically, it would be a great place to defend and hole up, which is what, according to the Paiute tradition, the giants did. So we get there. We're all excited. The cameras are rolling, and we're moving around to the place where the handprint supposedly was. Now, before I tell you what happened, that picture of the handprint, and there's this gentleman holding a knife to give you an idea, like a Bowie knife,
yeah,
how big this handprint is. I mean, it's really large, about twice to three times the size of mine, and it's on the rock.
Clearly a giant's handprint.
Absolutely. And it's there, and he posted it on Facebook, mistake number one, and
yeah.
Unfortunately. So by the time we got there, and again, this is in the back recess of what is now the last remains of the cave, and you really got to be looking for it. There's no lights. You got to have flashlights, and you got to be looking for this thing. So we get there, and Ron and Joe are freaked out because they can't find it. And Joe goes, or Ron goes, one of them basically say, look, this is the rock. I know this is the rock. This is the place. It's not there. George, someone had come in and either chipped it off, washed it off with acid. The bottom line was it was completely obliterated. There wasn't a trace of it at
Vandals?
Nothing at all.
I mean, do you think it was vandalized?
No, I don't think it was vandalized at all. I think it
suppression.
I think it was very deliberate by the powers that be. Of course, that's where I'm going to fall to, because that's what, having been out in Catalina and seeing everything else that they do, that's the way the game is played. And they didn't want this out there. The mistake these guys did was posting it on Facebook, and somehow it alerted the BLM or the powers that be. And, I mean, when we went to the rock, there was nothing there. I mean, why would a vandal do that? I mean, if you were a vandal, why not go there and take a bunch of pictures and post them on your Facebook page? Wasn't done. And this is in a really remote area. I mean, it's not like someplace you can just frolic to. I mean, it's in a very, very remote area, and it's hard to get to. It's on a dirt road, and you've got to hike up to the cave, and then you've got to know where it is. And without flashlights, I mean, yeah, you could find it if you know it's there, but if you're not looking for it, even with flashlights, it would be hard to find, and these guys discovered it. When we got there, completely obliterated. So what's interesting to me is that hand ties back into the Native American oral tradition. Is it conclusive? Of course it's not. But it's another step in the direction of verifying the Native American oral tradition that there were giants, very, very large people with six fingers and red hair that were in part of the indigenous population that were there and doing unspeakable things. And what I find interesting, the fact that they were cannibals ties right into the ancient Book of Enoch,
yep,
which was found in the Dead Sea Scrolls. So,
I mean, they do. They literally echo stories that we hear from what happened in the Middle East and in that area a long time ago.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a definite connection between the two. Definite connection. It's not conclusive, but some of the DNA evidence, I think, that we uncover in the book and also in the film Watchers 10 points to that Middle Eastern European origin, and that's not supposed to be there.
Tell me about the ghost wolf.
There's a clip that's being shown on your site, and people can see it for themselves. This was taken at a Native American reservation in the Southwest, and I spent time with this person and looked at this, at the original footage off the game trail, the original footage, and watched it before and afterwards. And this person who took it, this woman who took it, she's Navajo and born and raised on that reservation. And she set up game trails specifically because in these areas, because people were reporting strange things happening, going on at night. And so the whole purpose of the game trail being there was because there was something's going on, so she sets up the game trails to see if it's, you know, what's happening here. She calls it a ghost wolf. I think that's a misnomer. It kind of looks like a wolf. But what you see, and there's only a small clip that I was sent of this. The actual film is a little longer. You can see it at the very end. That's what I've got. But to the left of the film, which isn't in the particular clip that's up on the Coast site, you see a Ford F-1, you see a pickup truck. I don't know, I think it's a Ford, but you see a pickup truck. And this thing appears from nowhere. It's like a gateway, an opening, a doorway to another dimension opens up. And this thing that kind of looks like a wolf, but it's really, you know, that's what she's calling it. It's some sort of, in my opinion, a demonic manifestation. It jumps over the truck, hits the ground, and then in just a few bounds or whatever, it just leaps into the air and then disappears. And, you know, I've watched this thing frame by frame by frame. My good friend and the co-producer of the Watchers series, who's, you know, Mr. Photoshop himself, Richard Shaw, he examined it, and he thought it was the real deal. There was no evidence of Photoshop.
It would look very difficult to Photoshop that scene.
Pretty weird.
Yeah.
Definitely weird.
And it's short. It's like 11, 12 seconds
long.
Yeah,
it's just a very, very short clip. It goes in and out of the frame. And remember, the game trail is putting a frame up like every, well, you can set it for one every 3 seconds, a frame every second. I mean, you know, you can set the game trail like that, and that's how that works. What's interesting is on this reservation, there's all sorts of occult activity. I mean, all sorts of occult activity, and it's ongoing. Everything from multiple Bigfoot sightings to UFO sightings to very strange chimeras being sighted. It's all over the map.
And you can see that video at coasttocoastam.com. Lynn was kind enough to get it to us. It is amazing. Let's talk a little bit about skinwalkers. Skinwalkers, of course, a person who has got the ability to flip and turn into a shapeshift into an animal, for example. You've come across some of that in the book.
Not personally, and frankly, I don't want to, for the obvious reasons. But I spoke to a man who had two encounters with it, and he has to remain anonymous. But I interviewed him, and he comes in on the record. That interview is verbatim in the book, Nephilim Hybrids. And look, I'm not calling a skinwalker a Nephilim hybrid. That's just a generic term I'm using because we're not sure exactly what we're looking at. But it all links back to the dark side. That's the point. It all links back to the dark side. And I remember speaking to one gentleman who was being trained to become a skinwalker. And in order to attain the power, you have to kill a family member. He came on the record and told me this. So here's the first of the two stories that this guy told me. He grew up on the reservation, Navajo Reservation. And he and a bunch of buddies, like three or four guys, are walking in this one place. And he actually took me to the place. And it's sort of rolling hills with chaparral, cactus.
Mm-hmm.
It's semi-desert. I mean, it's the desert. And as they're walking, it's getting around dusk, and they hear this piercing scream coming from the other side of this small hill. So these guys run up to the top of the hill, and what meets their eye and is coming up towards them just completely freaks them out. Now, these guys grew up on the reservation, so they knew about skinwalkers. But this was the first time that this guy had ever seen anything like this. It had the body of a man, the thighs of a man, but from the knees down, the legs of a wolf, and from the neck up, and it wasn't a mask, George, it wasn't a mask. From the neck up, it was a wolf's head, basically what we would call a werewolf. And, of course, they were absolutely terrified. And they ran like crazy, and this thing chased them and followed them. And they got to this house and slammed the door, and this thing was, like, scratching and pounding on the door. And then some weird stuff happened, and the thing went away. That's the first encounter. The second encounter is, to me, incredible, and it shows, a person that's schooled in spiritual warfare knows how to handle stuff like this. And this guy's father was a pastor, was a Native American who became a pastor, became a Christian, then became a pastor. And there was a skinwalker that was terrorizing this one family. And there were death threats on this family. So one night, now the kid's about 21, and he's at home with his father. The phone rings, and it's this family, and they're freaked out because the skinwalker is on the property, and they've seen it, and it's coming to kill them. That's what it's there to do. And so this pastor, without any hesitation, George, without any hesitation, he grabs his Bible and goes, "Let's go!" And they get in the pickup truck. He and his son, and they drive over to the house. And this guy is not timid. He jumps out of the car and goes, "Where is it?" and goes running at it. He goes running at it, and he's yelling at the top of his lungs, "In the name of Jesus!" I mean, it's something right out of some novel someplace or some, you know, religious film. But the bottom line was this thing retreated. And talking to the son, who at that time was 21, told me that they chased it into the brush. And it moved again so quickly and with such agility that it would move from like one place to the other place. And it was difficult to find, but they got it into this one place, and then it just sort of vanished. It just went away. And they saw the prints around the house. They saw the wolf prints around the house. So it was interesting to me. And look, I'm not trying to sound religious here, but this guy dealt with this stuff. You know, he dealt with it one-on-one, and that power in that name chased the thing out, and that, not his authority, but the authority of someone greater.
With all these things you've looked at, L.A., what does this tell you about what's happening here?
mm. I think what's happening, George, I think that the veil that separates the unseen supernatural dimension from the natural world that we live in is getting very, very thin. I remember a few shows ago we were talking about black-eyed kids on your show, and that was in Watchers 5, and we interviewed people like David Weberly, who was just
an expert on that.
Incredible researcher. But we sat down with a woman, Leah Campin, who came on the record. She had an encounter with this thing, and Richard Shaw did a wonderful job reenacting that in Watchers 5, and it looked like something out of the X-Files, but these black-eyed kids are real. And I get, I'm gonna guess I get at least one a month, an email from first-person account where someone has an encounter with it. There was a woman that just wrote me recently, like in the last 24 hours. Her husband, who is no longer with her and passed away several years ago, she watched his eyes go completely black. And that's what she wrote me about. She saw or heard me talking about it, and she wrote me asking about, you know, what was this? What did I see? And this guy's eyes went completely black. And we've heard more, like I said, I get about one a month, roughly, from somebody that has an encounter. So something's going on. I think things are shifting. The fact that we've got that fairy that even though it's been a while since Jaime's had that thing, things are happening. Things are happening, and it's sort of unnerving.
Are other researchers taking note of all of this?
Well, yeah. Look, some of this stuff is met with a lot of skepticism, and I mean, I get that. For instance, our DNA evidence has been met with a lot of skepticism. Not a lot of skepticism, but some skepticism. And, you know, in the book, Nephilim Hybrids, I reproduce the letter, the complete report from a Lakehead University up in Canada, which talks about the DNA. And they had, George, you got to remember, they had no idea what they were looking at. They have no Nephilim dog in the hunt. All they're doing is they're taking a sample and they're testing it. That's it. That's all they're doing. They have no idea where it's coming from. We told them it's ancient DNA because we did a carbon-14 dating on it, and we know it's about 825, 850 years old. We know that. That's all we told them. So it's paleo, ancient DNA. And the DNA testing came back. The mitochondrial DNA was extracted. The mitochondrial DNA was then shown to be from the haplogroup, and that's from the mother's side of the family, T2B, which is Syria and Mesopotamia, which is, in my opinion, and that's a part of our hypotheses, I call that Nephilim Central, because that includes the area known as Mount Hermon, and the late David Flynn waxed eloquent about this, talked about the 200 watcher angels coming down in the days of Jared that we read about in the Book of Enoch, that's on Mount Hermon.
More to talk about with you, L.A., when we come back. We're going to talk about some DNA results, and we're going to take your phone calls, too, on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. L.A. Marzulli, our special guest. We're going to continue talking with him about the Nephilim hybrids and take your calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. L.A. Marzulli with us. Nephilim hybrids. Great book, by the way. Great pictures inside, too.
Appreciate it.
This creature that you've got on there in the middle, right after page 48,
uh-huh.
It really is weird.
Are you talking the fairy or?
Yeah.
Yeah, that thing is just, Jaime actually sent me a picture of when he first received it, and it's got even more detail. It's even more unnerving. And again, I just go back to the x-rays, because when we looked at it, we didn't know what it was. I mean, I've never seen anything like it before or since. And the x-rays to me, and I've had other medical doctors look at them. I've had a radiologist look at them, obviously the veterinarian. I had a nurse come up and look at them. The hunters who came up at the conference identified the birdshot as number 7 birdshot. They also could tell by the placement of the birdshot in the creature. They shot that thing between 50 and 75 feet away. So, you know, we just keep getting more and more evidence. We're trying to get a forensic pathologist to look at the x-rays. That could be very telling. I had one medical doctor who said that the thing was, according to him, he looked at this thing, looked at the x-rays, and from a forensic pathology point of view, he stated that, in his opinion, the thing was still alive when it hit the ground.
Oh, wow.
And it broke its leg hitting the ground and fractured its shoulder. That was his assessment. So, I mean, it's very interesting.
Have they looked at it, x-rayed it? Does it have like a little heart, little lungs, everything like that?
Everything is in there. The skeletal system is there. That's why we really need a forensic pathologist to examine it. The veterinarian looked at it, and he said, and he kept going back to this, and nervous laughter. I've got the audio. It's nervous laughter. He goes, you know, it sure looks real. If somebody put this thing together, they did a masterful job. And then why? I mean, the kid who found it gave it to Jaime. There was not like thousands of dollars exchanged. It was nothing like that. Jaime sat on this thing for years. And then he let us break the story and go figure. And we've done sort of due diligence with it. I sent the x-rays to one of the top radiologists in the United States. And this guy wrote me back. And he stated on the record that, when I say on the record, he won't come on the record, but I mean, to me, he came on the record. And he said, my gut tells me it's got to be a hoax. My gut tells me it's got to be a hoax, but I'm not so sure. Right? And this is one of the top radiologists. He couldn't say one way or the other, you know, because he's looking at this thing and he's never seen anything. And he says it in the letter. I've never seen anything like this. I don't know what to make of it. My gut says it's a hoax, but it looks real.
Any idea how old it is, L.A.?
No clue.
Nothing.
Absolutely no clue.
I guess it can be carbon dated, though, couldn't it?
Probably, although I don't think you can carbon date. Well, no, I guess you can carbon date it. I suppose we could do that.
You could.
You know, it's just like when you're looking at the giant Georgia, you were commenting on Steve Quell's story and then the story that we added to Steve Quell's story. What's interesting here is there's got to be more than one of these things. Where did it come from?
They obviously breed because they're here.
Absolutely. It raises more questions than it answers, and I find that incredibly alarming. And it also echoes what we read about in Revelation chapter 9. I'm not stating that this is what comes up out of the abyss, but I got to tell you, it fits the bill.
Yeah.
You know, in many ways.
Well, are they insect? Are they animal? Are they human? Are they, you know, are they some kind of other creature? Are they demons? Who knows?
It's some kind of chimera, in my opinion, but that's just my personal take on it.
And are they extraterrestrial?
Well, here's the deal. You know, the name of the book is Nephilim Hybrids, okay? And the subtitle is Chimeras and Strange Creatures. What we believe, you know, not all Nephilim are giants.
No.
Okay, yeah, we get that. Some of them are. But others may not be. Others may be the elongated skulls that we see in Peru, which certainly aren't giants. They're not like 9 or 10 footers or anything like that. But they're very, very bizarre. And some of our findings with the archaeologists that examine many of these skulls, we feel that there's some sort of genetic manipulation. The key to this is the seed of a serpent is enmity with the seed of the woman. We talked about that when I first got on the show this evening. We think, when I say we, the team of people, Richard Shaw, Brian Forrester, both of our archaeologists, Rick Woodward, Mondo Gonzalez, and Chase Klotsky, we feel that there's some sort of genetic manipulation going on here. An outside agency is manipulating the human genome. That's what we feel. And Brian Forrester believes that, too.
To the phones we go. Let's go to Michael in Iowa to get things started on the wild card line. Michael, go ahead.
I have a prophecy before me that seems to be describing what you were talking about, the very first creature there. It says this: the locusts look like horses ready for battle. On their heads were what seemed to be gold crowns. Their faces were like human faces. Their hair was like women's hair, and their teeth were like a lion's teeth. In the front, they had what seemed to be iron armor on their chests, and the sound of their wings was like the sound of many chariots and horses running to battle. They have tails with stingers, just like scorpions, and in their tails was the power to hurt people. Their king was the angel from the abyss, whose in the Hebrew's name is Abaddon, and in Greek it's Apollyon. That's That's Revelation chapter 9.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It's bizarre, isn't it, L.A.?
Well, what amazes me, and thank you for reading that. I really appreciate it.
Right on.
I got to tell you, the first time, and again, we're in Jaime's office. Jaime reaches up, picks this jar out of the closet, sets it on his desk, and bounds out of the room. And we're sitting there going, you've got to be kidding me.
Huh.
And I'm looking at this thing in the jar, and my first thought is, oh, my gosh, that reminds me of Revelation 9. That's my first thought. That reminds me of what is described coming up out of the abyss. I'm not saying it is, but I got to tell you, it certainly ties back into that.
Strange. Sylvia in Chatsworth, California. Hi, Sylvia. Welcome to the program.
Hi, George. How are you?
We're great.
Oh, well, first off, I want to say that I am blind, and at the Braille Institute in Los Angeles, you have a great following. We love you.
Oh, great. Thank you. Thank them all for me.
Okay. Well, I was wanting to say, and hi, L.A., there's actual footage of that thing flying. Yep.
You have actual footage of the creature flying?
Yes, you can go, you can write this down. It's top 10 angel encounters caught on tape flying. You must put that in. And out of the top 10, it's the last one. Or you could put in UK fairy, because in the UK.
Oh, the UK fairy. Yeah, we've looked at that, and both Richard and I think it's a hoax. It doesn't look anything like what we found. And it's basically CGI. The whole thing is staged. I know what you're talking about. I've seen it.
Oh, the top 10?
Yeah, I've seen that one. That's, we feel it's completely staged.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, well. Very convincing.
Hey, but it was worth it.
It was worth it, and I got to tell you, Sylvia.
Thanks, Sylvia.
It's comments like yours which keeps us on our toes, because before we broke this story, Jaime allowed us to break it. Before we even did that, Richard and I were really careful. We were kind of going like, do we run with this thing? What if it's a hoax and we get egg on our faces? And for us, the X-rays and the vet looking at it, that's what tipped the scale.
Where is it now?
Jaime's got it in his possession. We're trying to get it up into the States to do extensive testing on it.
Does he have it hidden, guarded, put in a safe? Where?
It's probably in the same cabinet above his desk.
Somebody could just walk in and take it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Next up, we go to Kelly in Sholo, Arizona, west of the Rockies. Hi, Kelly. Welcome to the program. Hey, Kel?
Yeah, I'm here. I thought I was disconnected. Thank you.
There you are.
Yeah. I kind of got to go slow with this because I get excited, but I'd really like to meet with L.A. I've been living in the middle of an ancient community of these for about 2 years, and they're alive and well. And I talked to archaeologists and paleontologists way beyond their scope. And I've got artifacts, I've got thousands of pictures, thousands of videos. I met with MUFON way beyond their scope. But, you know, I like you said with that other guy, like I've met with him, I've never been afraid of him. My wife doesn't want to come back. And I live out in a remote area off the grid, and they've taught me in exchange for things that they've been taken because I know it, haven't said anything, they've taught me just so much. And I'll meet with them, and when I first met with them, you know, I have to get home, and I'm on a dirt road, and I said, no, I got to get home. I can't just stop, because they don't, the things that I mean, they don't communicate verbally. It's
telepathic.
And so I said, meet me at my place. I mean, just like that in my mind. So out in the back, at the edge of my property, I saw two lights, and they're up about 9 feet tall. So this is a first encounter where I've learned how to speak with them. And first, I don't know what I said. I just closed my eyes. I had a gun, a camera. I said, I'm leaving it in the car. I walked out to them. And what came to mind for me, I don't know why, I said, I don't know who you are, the elements you're made of. I know you got a bad rap. And I said, and I said, you know, you haven't hurt me. Don't hurt my wife. I love her very much. And I said, and you can't have much of a worse rap than the humans do, because we rip our babies out of the womb, limb by limb. And I said, but I want you to know something. I said, I do believe in my Father, the Most High, and Jesus Christ is my Savior. So if you have a problem with that, then we need to address this now. I don't know why I said this. And then as I said that, they sat there to him for a little bit, and then they slowly backed off. But I haven't scared them away. And I've got so much evidence of this. It's just incredible. It's still there was a phase where it was really heavy, and they've really toned down that phase. But they'll still show up. The shape-shifting, I got pictures of that. I got, you know, there's so many different things. And L.A., it sounds like he's someone that might come and spend some time. It'd take me 2 months with him, solid, for him to see and learn everything I've learned. And it's all solid evidence. I mean, I just found they taught me how to find them, what to look for, and it's way beyond Native American.
All right. How does he get a hold of you, L.A.?
Shoot me an email, la@lamarzulli.net. Pretty straight ahead.
Right off your website as well?
That's it, right off the website.
Well, best way to go. What's new with Paracas?
Wow. Basically, we're getting closer to actually getting permits to go down and take multiple samples from multiple skulls. And we've learned in the last 3 years the best way to do it. The samples that we tested were hair samples that we were legally able to take out from Senior Juan's museum. And there's no scalp attached, it's just hair. And the hair samples were tested in different laboratories. Out of the three DNA labs, only one of them would come on the record with us. And I promised the other two labs I would not divulge names and where they were, who did the testing. We have written reports from them, but without letterhead. The only lab that would come on the record was the Canadian lab. The Canadian lab tested a skull which came from La Oroja. We talked about this the last time. Greatly elongated. It doesn't look anything like a normal human skull. In our opinion, there's no way that you can cradle headboard a skull like this. You kill the child. The forehead, the frontal plate, goes back pretty much at a 45-degree angle. And we were able to procure powder from that skull and do DNA testing on it. And that testing came back, the haplogroup, which I mentioned earlier, T2B, which is Syria, Mesopotamia. So, look, all that report is in toto, verbatim, in the back of the book, Nephilim Hybrids. It's right there. It's the only lab that will come on the record with us. The two labs in the States will not come on the record with us. The geneticist that originally was working with us was fired for working with us. So there's all sorts of stuff going on with this.
Just an amazing amount of research has gone into this from you, from, remember Lloyd Pye's
Lloyd
work?
Lloyd Pye, sure. Yeah. Lloyd Pye, the late Lloyd Pye. We are on the trail, and this is what people don't get. It's like, here's hardcore, solid DNA evidence that we show in the book, in the movie. We're not making this stuff up. It's hard science. And some of the skeptics out there, they've never seen the film. They have no idea what the evidence actually states, but they're so sure it doesn't state what we say it is. And then they say, well, we don't have the paperwork. The paperwork's right there. Did we show the paperwork in the book? We've got geneticists coming in on the record. Stephen and Renee Frat-Pietro. In fact, I talked with Stephen today up in the lab in Canada. There's ongoing research. He's actually trying to extract more DNA from the hair samples that he has left, to see if there's any anomalies, see if he can pull out more information for us. So the research is ongoing. And we're not saying the Paracas people were Nephilim. We're not saying that. But our hypothesis has been that Nephilim tribes were in the Promised Land. And when Joshua and Caleb pressed in and began to eradicate these hybrid entities, there was a diaspora. And if that's true, then we should see evidence of that. That's what the Catalina research is all about, 9-footer on Catalina Island. I mean, I'm not making that up. There it was in the archives. You can see it for yourself in the book and the way the museum is redacted. I think one of the startling discoveries, which we've never mentioned, it's in the film, Watcher's DNA. It's also in the book. Rick Woodward contacted me. He's an archaeologist. And he was stating that L.A., we think, and he's examined hundreds, if not thousands, of skulls. He maintains, and there's pictures up on your website showing this. You can see it for yourself. The skull on the right is a normal human skull. The other skulls are cast from the Paracas. And you can see that that circular area, the opening is a different shape,
yeah, very strange
size, and it's also placed in a different position than a normal human skull. And that, we think, is genetic. And that's why more DNA testing needs to be done. There's an outside agency that's manipulating the human genome. But that's exactly what we stated at the very first 5 minutes of the show. The seed of the serpent will be at enmity, at war with the seed of the woman. And that's it's all about the seed. And seed in the Hebrew is sperma. That's what it is. And that's it's genetic information. And we're looking at chimeras, we're looking at genetic tampering. It's incredible. But we're seeing evidence that seems to point to that.
Would you be scared if you saw these creatures coming at you at night?
The fairy?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You would?
Yeah.
Would you run, jump in your car? What would you do?
That's really interesting. The first thing I would do is I tell people this at conferences, I would rebuke first and ask questions later. Yeah, that's what I would do. I would, as loud as I possibly could. The Lord of the Rings, Tolkien was a believer. And there's that one thing when Gandalf raises his staff and goes, "You shall not pass." And that's the kind of thing that, look, I put on my armor every day. I put that on every day. And I would hope that if I met with something like that, my first instinct would immediately to be rebuking. And I've trained myself to do that. I've never had to use it, because I've never seen anything like that coming at me. But if it did, that's my default.
It looks evil, L.A.
I agree. I totally agree with you, George. It's not. It certainly isn't Winnie the Pooh.
No. It's not one of those things you'd want to give to a little kid to pet with and say, here.
Especially with that scorpion stinger thing on the back with the tail. Very nasty.
Well, in the fact that, as we had from the call, that it kind of echoes Revelation.
Yes.
That's weird, too, because, you know, assuming it's not a hoax, and we don't know what it is, it matches what's in Revelation.
It matches fairly closely. And again, this is, we don't know where this thing comes from. Is it a male or female? We don't know. We don't know what we're seeing in the book of Revelation. Are they dressed? Are that some sort of a uniform they're dressed with? Is that why this thing doesn't match it exactly? But it's got wings. It's got the tail like a scorpion. It does have teeth like a lion. We've seen that. It's very bizarre looking.
It's something. We're going to come back and take final calls with L.A. Marzulli, Nephilim Hybrids, next. And welcome back, L.A. Marzulli with us. L.A., what's your next project?
Well, we're actually working on Watchers 11. We're getting people lined up to do interviews. We feel disclosure might be sooner than later. And what I'm talking about is what I call the coming great deception. It's the game changer, whatever label we want to put on it. When the UFO phenomenon is actually revealed on some level, or at least disclosed to the American people, it will change the entire planet as we know it. I mean, it really will. It'll be a total game changer.
How will people react, in your opinion?
I think people will abandon basically abandon traditional religion as we know it now. This will lead to the globalization and a one-world political system, a one-world government, a one-world religious system, which has been prophesied by ancient prophetic texts thousands of years ago. So that doesn't come as a surprise to me. I think that would amalgamate everything very nicely if the so-called overlords show up. It changes everything, and especially if they're touting some interesting bonuses like a DNA upgrade. Take this little implant, and it'll change your DNA, and you'll live for 300 to 500 years disease-free. We've talked about this on the show before, and I've written about that 3 or 4 books ago, the idea of the cosmic chess match. I think that the implants that we've taken out of people, and we did this in Watchers 7 and Watchers 8 with the late Dr. Roger Lear, which was just incredible, that implant that we took out, number 17, vanished. It was not there, George. And I've talked about that at length on your show. It wasn't there. We couldn't find it when we were in the operating room. And I just shot up a quick prayer because it had been an hour and 20 minutes. And I'm in a room full of people that don't, you know, that don't believe in this stuff. That's fine. So I just said, look, guys, I'm going to pray. This might sound really weird, but I'm going to pray and I'm going to do it now. And it was just something real simple. Father, if there are forces which are cloaking this device, I pray that you would break their power and do it soon. George,
within less than 2 minutes, less than a minute, this thing appeared on the ultrasound machine monitor, on the ultrasound monitor out of nowhere. And everybody, including Dr. Roger Lear, everyone was freaked out, including myself. I go, oh, my gosh, what's that?
Something.
And 2 days later, the last time I saw Roger before his untimely passing, several years ago now, hard to believe it's been that
long.
Oh,
my God, I know. We miss him.
But he looked at me, and I said, I told him, Roger, it was one-on-one in the hallway, just the two of us, at Seal Lab, and because we're looking at the implant under a scanning electron microscope. Real science, folks. And I said, Roger, I hope you realize what happened in that operating theater. And he looked at me, George, and his eyes got real big, and he said, L.A., I now believe that there's a supernatural component to the implants and the extraterrestrial phenomena, and I'm going to tell Whitley Strieber about it. And that was the last time we ever spoke. And when we went to Peru, we got back from Peru, and Roger, a couple of weeks later, had passed away. So we really miss him. He was a pioneer and just a great guy.
One of a kind, and nobody's replaced him yet.
Nope.
Not like that.
Not like that.
To the phones we go. Jeff in Culver City, California. Hey, Jeffrey, go ahead.
Hi, George and Mr. Marzulli.
Hi, yeah, how you
doing?
I'm
so glad that you guys are talking about hybrids and, I suppose, the newest entities that we are experiencing, and that would be these genetically engineered reptilian clones that mimic and look like regular humans. But there's something strange about these quote-unquote people running all around our country and perhaps other countries in this weird experiment. And it makes me think about that film featuring the late Roddy Piper called They Live, where if you were, you know, if you was wearing a certain pair of sunglasses, you could see these alien-type demonoids, hybrids, for what they really are and how they really look like. You know, I call them demonoids. But my question is this, Mr. Marzulli. Have you heard that old saying, what came first, the chicken or the egg?
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with the Nephilim. How did they get their information and from where and from whom and what entity? And what is the ultimate intent of these hybrid Nephilim, genetically engineered reptilian clones walking amongst us now? And I'll take your answer off the air.
It's a lot of questions.
But you can handle it, L.A.
Let's go back to the basics. The Nephilim are the progeny of the fallen angels. And remember, angel just means messenger. So whatever these entities are, they have the ability, the Greek word is metaschismatosai, which means they have the ability to appear pretty much as whatever they want. They can appear as men if they want. They can appear as women. They can appear as whatever they want. Metaschismatosai. They can change their shape. They mate with the women of Earth. There's genetic information that somehow is passed, and that's sperma, because we know that's what the ancient prophetic text tells us. And the offspring of this unholy union is the Nephilim. This is the reason for the flood. But then they occur afterwards. And I think that the breeding program that's going on now, the hybridization, the black-eyed kids, the hybrids that seem to be walking among us, and, of course, we're referring to Dr. Jacob's work. And I realize a lot of people look at that and poo-poo it. And we've spent time with Dr. Jacob, and I've read his recent book, and, you know, hybrids walking among us. And, frankly, I've got reports from people, which I've documented. I'll just tell you a real quick one. This guy's a pastor, okay? He's doing a prayer walk on a Saturday morning just by himself in a park last year. The guy's name is Pastor Mike. So he's just doing this walk, minding his own business, just praying to himself, okay? In the distance, he sees a female jogger. She's 6'2 to 6'4. She's tall, athletic-looking, whitish, striking whitish blondish hair, pulled back in a ponytail, very athletic-looking. Okay, you know, women basketball players look like that. But for some reason, he's unnerved by what he's seeing. This woman starts running, and she runs towards him. And he's sort of on guard, but he's not sure why. He just feels uneasy. Their eyes meet about 15 to 20 feet away. He realizes she has striking pale blue eyes. Again, nothing happens. All of a sudden, the eyes change and go black. At this point, and he's rebuking first, ask questions later. Out loud, he's rebuking this thing. As she runs by him, she bares her teeth and growls. Bares her teeth and growls. And he texted me moments after it happened.
Gosh.
And I called him. I interviewed him. You know, it's all written down. He came on the record. And his text was, he told me the story, and his text was, welcome to the war. Now, was that a hybrid being? I don't know what it was. The eyes went black. She growled, bared her teeth at him.
Sounds like a hybrid to me, but we don't know. I mean, there's so much that we don't know. So we put labels on them, and they may be misnomers.
Donald in Kent, Ohio. Hey, Don, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you so much. And, L.A., I ran into it at Vienna, a suburb of Youngstown, a number of years ago, where you had an excellent video on mystery in the fast lane.
Yes.
And, you know, the gentleman that called in earlier, your first caller was, you know, quoting, of course, Revelations 9, and these creatures are composite. They're basically, you know, chimera type, the locust. But it's interesting in verse 4, they do not attack the people with the seal of God. So there's a religious component here.
Yeah, there is. Absolutely.
And, of course, the seal of God has to do with the Sabbath. But it states in, like, verse 5 that they can torment men for 5 months with their sting. But if you notice the important thing in verse 6, it says that men will seek death and not find it. So basically we're talking zombies here. The people have been genetically altered, maybe for vaccinations or something in their food, something of that. But in verse 9 is one of the key tickets. It says they have the locusts have the breastplates of armor, which means they can be killed with firearms. One of the big reasons America is being attacked on her Second Amendment rights issue. So you'll find that all the nations that have gun control will lose a majority of their population of these 200 million man army. But when you want to talk about dimensional travel real quick, in Job 1:7, God asks Satan where he's been. He says, walking to and fro in the earth. To and fro is a basically dimensional travel. But when you go to the composite or the comparison book of Revelation, which would be Daniel 12, it says, and many shall run to and fro, not walk, but run to and fro at the end of time. So some secrets are going to be open about dimensional travel. We will have the ability, I believe, to run to and fro. When you get into 2 Samuel 21, it says the giants of Gath had 6 fingers. Yeah. And 6 toes. And if you go into 1 Corinthians chapter 12, there were men that had faces like lions.
Yes.
And 2 Samuel 23, yes. Ben and I killed 2 lion-like
men.
This had been going on for centuries.
It's absolutely. It's been going on, and it's been swept under the rug.
And we don't hear about it. It's only through Coast to Coast and programs like this
yes.
that we are informed.
Yes. Thank you, George.
Yeah, well, thank you, L.A., because you and people like Richard Shaw bring us the information that allows us to get it out to everybody.
There you go.
And I love it. I'm still in awe with your cover on the Nephilim hybrids. This little creature in the formaldehyde just really just looks evil.
I got to tell you, it completely freaked us out. I'll never forget it when Jaime just reached up and brought the thing down, set it on the desk, and Richard and I looked at each other, and I just went, you have got to be kidding me. Do you think it's real? And we just kind of gave each other the, I don't know, and then Jaime's gone. It's just that we're in the room alone with this thing. And when the camera comes out, and we pick up the jar, we're looking at it, holding it, and then later on that day, Ricardo Rengel came in and took the thing out of the jar and got it x-rayed. We were there when the x-rays came back. And we're all crowded around, holding them up, looking at them, and like, what are these white things? Well, they look like implants. Because that's what we thought maybe they were. We didn't know what they were. They really were mysterious 3 years ago when we saw them. It was only when we went to the veterinarian that we cleared that up. Oh, they're BBs. It's bird shot. The thing was shot out of the sky. And then 2 hunters look at the x-rays and I was at the Colorado conference and stated it's number 7 bird shot.
They knew by the size.
They knew by the size.
When might it have been shot? Do we know who shot it?
No clue. None.
Location?
It's somewhere. Jaime knew that. Apparently it was on the exit. The family was driving from Guadalajara to Mexico City, and Jaime told me what the exit was, but I don't remember. It's a Spanish name. But it was an exit that they had pulled over so the 13-year-old boy could do his business. And he's finished, and he looks down, and there's this thing on the side of the road. And he has a presence of mind to pick it up, and they bring it to Jaime. And Jaime sent me a photograph when they first get this thing, and they're all examining it.
How old is the little boy now?
I think that's like, don't quote me, 8 years ago, 9 years ago.
So he's still around?
Yeah, he's still around.
I wonder if we can get to him.
That'd be interesting.
Oh, be sure would. Jaime would know, would he not?
Jaime would know, yes.
Let's check into that. First-time caller, Corey in Stockton, California. Corey, go ahead.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hi.
I met a woman who I think she might be a Nephilim, but I'm not sure.
Uh-oh.
My grandfather died last year, and my mom invited me to his home to help sort out some of the things. And my mom has a brother who has a new girlfriend, and so I met her, and there's something strange about her.
Plus, she's 9 feet tall.
No, she was actually very energetic and very friendly, but there's something about her I wanted to see. So I looked into her eyes. I got into a well-lit room, and I looked at her eyes, and her pupils were like alligator pupils.
Reptilian, you mean?
Yeah.
Yes, reptilian. And because there was no white at the bottom or the top. It was like a straight line of black with a little circle in the middle.
Yeah. That's reptilian. Now, reptilians, L.A., is that symptomatic of...
I'll tell you a story. This guy called us up. This was up in Canada. A friend of ours, he ran to this guy. The guy that had the experience ran to this friend. His name is Gordy. And so Gordy calls me up, and this guy is frantic. He's absolutely freaked out. And he was an experiencer. He had been abducted several times. He was in lots of UFOs. He was dating this one woman. She always wore sunglasses, and he just left. He just moved out of the area figuring, I got to get away from all these people. Maybe the abductions will stop. I'll stop seeing these things. And so he goes to this other town. Well, unbeknownst to him, this woman follows him there, and she invites him over. So he goes over, and this guy's telling me the story on the phone, telling me the whole story. This is like hours or after it happened. He's completely freaked out, and who wouldn't be? And she always wore sunglasses. And they're seated together in a room. They're having some wine. There's another woman, this woman's friend, and a fly. I'm not making this up, George. I wish I was. This fly lands on her glass, and this tongue flicks out of her mouth and grabs the fly and goes back. It's like right out of something.
Like a lizard woman.
Like a lizard. And she takes off her glasses, and there are the reptilian eyes. The guy flees the house.
I would too.
And then he's calling me on the phone, and we just told him what was going on. We sent him materials and books, and you know he gave his life to a higher power.
My God!
Gave his life to Jesus and got out of the thing.
But I might come back with flowers later on. You never know. Howard in Vancouver, Washington. Hey, Howard, welcome to the show.
Hello, George.
Hey.
Thank you for taking my call again.
Sure thing.
I have a thought I'd like to run past Mr. Marzulli there. We're speaking about the beings with the elongated skulls.
Sure.
Now, judging by their cranial capacity, I think I could assume that they probably had a tremendous intellectual capability, if not psychic ability as well.
Yes.
Now, that being said, perhaps they knew that eventually someone would have the ability to clone them. And that is why they went to such extreme lengths to preserve their DNA for long periods of time through the process of mummification. What do you think about that?
I think it's a great thought, and I got to tell you, I think it's already been done. I really do. I think, look, Steve Quayle broke the story years ago on Coast to Coast where the pilot talks about, I think it's 2008, if I'm not mistaken, George, flying that body out of Afghanistan, more than likely to Wright-Patterson, Ohio. Are you kidding me? We know they have got to have taken samples, tissue samples, looked at the DNA. Who knows what they're doing? Creating super soldiers, injecting some of that DNA, modifying that DNA. But I think that's an astute observation on your part, and I think that's exactly what's going on.
Okay, we're almost out of time. Gosh, L.A., fast night.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
2 hours zipping by.
Where do you get the book, Nephilim Hybrids?
LAMarzulli.net, LAMarzulli.net. You can get Watchers 10 and Nephilim Hybrid, the companion book to that. And you can also go to Vimeo and watch Watchers 10 there. Our Vimeo account is LAMarzulli. So if you don't want to buy the whole DVD, you can just go to Vimeo and watch it. I think it's groundbreaking material. The book has the printed out
DNA evidence and results from the Canadian lab. You can look at that yourself. You can see what it is. There it is. It's a scientific report. No nonsense. You can see for yourself that something is going on with the Paracas skull, and it's a Middle East origin, which basically rewrites the history that we've been taught.
All right, my friend. Ellie Marzulli, Nephilim Hybrids, always, always. He's always just a remarkable person, superb guest as well.